Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Why are you pro-choice? That is our question for you today. Why are you pro-choice? And lots of folks are taking up that challenge to share why they're pro-choice with us today. Lines are full at the moment, but they usually open up a line or two every now and then. So give us a call if you're a pro-choice person and you would like to share your reasoning with us. And we hope engage in a respectful dialogue with us. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest this hour, Trent Horn, his most recent book, Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love, including a chapter on morality, why we defend marriage and why we defend or why we cherish our sexuality is one of them, and why we defend life, another. So you're getting an expert when you're getting Trent. 888-318-7884. Shall we just go right back to calls, Trent? Because there are a lot of them.
Sure.
All right. How about we go to Jim in – I never heard of this town, Jim. You're going to have to tell me where this is. Arcata, California. Why are you pro-choice, Jim?
It's Arcata. It's in California on the coast, northern coast.
Oh, north of LA?
I think that's the Bostonian pronunciation.
Yeah.
I just did.
Yeah.
No, that's Southern California. Arcata would be a Southern California.
Arcata.
Okay, all right. I don't need the pro-choice and the pro-life teaming up against me. Jim, why are you pro-choice?
Because it's the moral thing to do, to be pro-choice.
All right. Well, thank you for calling. No, just kidding. Do you want to dig into that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, Jim, what do you mean by the term pro-choice?
To leave a woman's right to make the final decision. Basically, to leave abortion is an intensely personal decision between a woman and her family and her doctor and whatever her morality might be. And there's no place for politicians and government to be in the way of that. The health care issues, and education, and the number of unintended pregnancies. People have used contraception. It fails, or they don't use it because of a religious belief that it's wrong, and then they get pregnant and are in a life situation. They get raped, and they're in a life situation. There's just a multitude of reasons morally why to leave that choice in the hands of the woman and her family, if there's a family, and her morality, their morality.
So abortion, so you're saying the issue of ending a pregnancy, of having an abortion, should just be left up to the woman involved because she feels like she needs an abortion?
Because she has morally examined the situation and has gone through it. If there's other parties involved with them and examined her morality, and made that choice, yes.
Okay.
Primarily, but it should be left to the woman.
Okay. Well, Jim, let me offer let's see if we can boost your connection a little, a similar example. It seems you're saying, well, this is a personal decision that really relates solely to the mother, and she may morally examine, feel it's the right thing to do, therefore she should be able to do that. Would you be willing to apply that to the other end of life? Do you think that a mother or father, or let's say a man and woman, who are caring for their elderly parents. Let's say that same woman you think should have an abortion is also caring for her 94-year-old grandmother at home, or her 94-year-old mother, whatever it might be. Let's say that. And she morally examines herself and thinks one day, okay, my mom is in you know, I don't think life is good for my mom, so I'm just going to go into her bedroom. I'm going to smother her with a pillow. Do you think that woman should have the right to do that in the privacy of her home with her mother because she thinks it's the right thing to do?
Whoa, smothering someone with a pillow, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, her 94-year-old mother, she thinks it's the right thing to do.
How does this example relate to a woman being pregnant and her poor, and I didn't say just the woman, I said her and her family and her morals.
Okay, so would you agree the issue of abortion, it involves the woman, her family, and the unborn human being, right?
Sure, yes. And her morality, okay. And morality of the greater good and morality. So if you're going to go to taking care of this grandmother or something like that, you have to consider a morality system.
Right, and this the same mother you're talking about thinks that it's moral, it reduces suffering, it's burdening her a lot to care for her mother. She doesn't want to have to give her provider to anybody else or deal with this. She just wants to smother her 94-year-old mother in the privacy of her bedroom. So my point is, why shouldn't we say that is her decision alone to make?
Because we have laws. And that is, that person has, you know, the legal rights not to be smothered. If they're incompetent to make the decision whether or not to end their life, then, you know, the law protects them.
So the law protects them whether they're 84, 94, 104. It doesn't matter how old they are.
There are laws that do protect people, yes.
Right. So then if the law protects people no matter how old they are, do you think the law should protect people no matter how young they are?
No matter how young they are?
Yes.
The law does protect people no matter how young they are.
Okay. So if a human being comes into existence and is 3 months old, and is growing in their mother's body, that's a three-month-old human being. Should the law protect that very young human?
Yes, and the mother, and the family, and the world, yes. They should.
Okay, so how would the law protect that three-month-old human in the womb?
And even with an elderly person, they should take into the consideration of the financial situation, the pain that person's in, the pain that person will be in throughout the rest of their life. They should take all of these things into consideration.
But in general, you're against smothering the elderly with pillows, right?
I have never done it, so I really couldn't tell you what that. Why would I do that?
Would you just say it's wrong, Jim? You don't have to do something wrong to be able to say it's wrong.
No. That's what morality is knowing, that's what a full set of morals is knowing what is right and wrong and determining that.
Right. So what you said earlier, I'm trying to tease out because it didn't quite make sense to me. You agreed a three-month-old in the womb, you know, a very, very young human should be protected. I didn't know if you misspoke. What would that look like? Because it seems to me the only thing that child needs in the womb is a law saying he or she cannot be aborted.
And I will go with this. I'll go with your example, although you tend to take us off track. I say, yes, I would have liked to kill my own father at one point, and I was not enabled that position. And he continued to suffer, and it was immoral for me to allow him to suffer, but I, you know, allowed him to do that because he was dying of cancer.
And I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but and that's what I'm saying. It depends on the case, and you need to have these situations where you allow this. I think abortion. Who likes? No one likes abortion. I think it's a thing to be avoided at all costs. I adopted a child.
Jim, what is it particularly about abortion people don't like?
What is it?
Yes.
go ahead. You can tell me what they like if you have that in mind.
I asked you the question. You're very confident people don't like abortion.
No.
What is it about abortion that people don't like?
What is it they don't like? I can tell you what I never really thought about other people's and their opinions of abortion. Well,
what do you not like about abortion?
I can tell you what I don't like. It's a moral dilemma in which somebody would, which I would not want to find myself in. I would not want to be that had sex with a woman and have her be pregnant and be in that situation where I would have her have an abortion. That's an
what makes abortion a moral dilemma?
What makes it a moral dilemma?
Yeah.
There's tons of people. I just went through rape. There's too many people in the world.
Okay, no, Jim, I'm just have to spell it out then. Wouldn't you agree people don't like abortion because it kills a very small developing human being? And in general, we don't kill small developing human beings when they're born, but we think we can get away with it when they're not born.
We do kill small developing children. People do that.
Before and after birth, or primarily before birth?
Yeah, they certainly do. People do that.
Should they do that?
Should they kill them? You'd have to give me a situation in which that's happening.
Okay, here's one. A woman might have to drop out of school unless she kills her child. Should she kill her child?
Her 3-month-old child? No, I think you should. The best choice would be to adopt it off, probably. As I said, I adopted the child at 2 years old. We didn't have children because it was, in our opinion, morally correct not to have children, you know, because there's too many people in the world. I think the best choice there is to have it adopted off. Yeah, and I think the best choice instead of an abortion is to have it adopted off. I believe that.
But you don't want to make it a law that says you can't do that to a child.
No, I do not.
We've reached our wall here, both in the conversation and on our time limit, unfortunately. But I think it is interesting when it comes down to it. I always find it interesting when people say, yeah, it does kill a baby. It does kill a small human being. So we need it. It's bad. But I would just say aside from all the obvious reasons why I think that's a bad argument, be careful of where that slope leads of saying, yeah, we know this is wrong. Yeah, we know this is bad, but we need it. That kind of thinking has rationalized many, many bad things in the history of humanity.
Jim from Arcata, thank you very much for that call. Trent Horn, our guest this hour. Why are you pro-choice? Our topic, this is Catholic Answers Live. We'll be right back.
Why are you pro-choice? Call now. Trent is waiting to talk to you. Talking about abortion can be scary, but so is anything with which you're unfamiliar. People need to learn how to talk about abortion in ways that inspire confidence in the truth of the pro-life position. We must talk about abortion because we are afraid. Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is the new book by apologist Trent Horn that teaches you to face those fears, to engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others. Field-tested on college campuses, Persuasive Pro-Life will help you to change people's hearts and minds and begin to build up a pro-life culture in today's world, one person, one conversation at a time. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, today by calling 1-888-291-8000, going to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area. Also available as an ebook.
Face it, it's tempting and easy to be a man of the world. Father Terence Ehrman has a challenge for you. Be a man of God instead. In his new book, Man of God, Father Ehrman draws on his experience counseling men who are struggling to live in the world but not be of the world. In a unique, easy-to-read format, he offers holy spiritual direction for all men who want to master themselves and be transformed from within. Order your copy of Man of God today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Why are you pro-choice? Our topic this hour. Actually, every single line is full at the moment, but if you're pro-choice and you would like to brave a conversation with Trent Horn, we're very happy to have your call, 888-318-7884. We go now to Lewis in New York, listening on EWTN. Lewis, why are you – oh, excuse me. Hang on, Lewis. I got to push the button, right? Why are you pro-choice, Lewis?
Yes, hello?
Hi. Why are you pro-choice, Lewis?
Listen. Now, I am pro-life, but I am a Catholic, and I have a Bible since I was able to read. I was faced with a dilemma in 1994. My wife at the time was pregnant, and the doctor had told us that the baby was going to be spinal bifida, and the brain was not, the skull was not protecting the brain, that it was going to be a stillborn.
All right.
And
I'm
the
sorry
child,
about that, Lewis.
The baby was, the baby was going to be, was 5 months. The legs were already formed and everything, but it was going to be stillborn. So as a Catholic, we could not continue the pregnancy another 3 months of knowing. I mean, the doctor, everybody, the specialist. And we terminated the pregnancy. We couldn't go on the extra 4 months or whatever knowing. It was a vitamin issue. Folic acid that protects the skull from forming.
Yeah.
And as a Catholic, I was faced with that dilemma.
Yeah.
I want to know, what is your position where there is a place for medical science and doctors? Soon after that, a few years, I saw a Catholic family had a baby with the same situation. They went full term. The baby was born basically without the brain, and they were keeping the child, the baby, through artificial means, and they finally unplugged the baby.
All right.
So,
Lewis, those are
–
okay. Lewis, hang on a sec, because I want Trent to be able to respond to your question that you asked before about what's his response in a situation like that.
Yeah, Lewis, I'm very sorry to hear of your loss, and no, our prayers are with you, even you know, something that – you know, whether it's 20 years, you know, 30 years or 30 days, when we experience loss like that, it always stays with us in some form. And so I am certainly very sorry for what you had to go through. And I think it's important to answer this question. You know, what do we do in a case where we have a child who is dying? And we want to be compassionate. We want to respond in a compassionate way in a medically appropriate way to help this child. First, not all spina bifida cases, to let our listeners know, are terminal. There's actually an amazing photograph of baby Samuel Armus. It's the one you've seen in Life magazine where he reaches through the lining of the uterus during an intrauterine surgery and appears to be grasping the finger of the of the doctor, the surgeon. That spina bifida in some cases can be treated in the womb, but not necessarily in all cases, especially cases from, you know, in medical past. What do we do in these cases? Well, what I would say is that if a child is sick in the womb and is dying, we should treat them the same way we would treat a born child. So let's say, for example, we had a two-year-old and we discovered they're having developmental problems and we're not sure what's wrong with them. We discover they have Tay-Sachs disease. Tay-Sachs is a neurodegenerative disorder where children around 3 or 4, they start to progress backwards back into infancy, and then they eventually die. I think there's some treatments now, but not necessarily for all, and it's a painful genetic disorder, and it's sad to know my child only has a certain number of days left. what we would do with that born child is we would care for them, we would provide them comfort, and if they're dying, we would just give them that comfort care to ease them naturally as they depart this life. One resource that's offered for that would be hospice. So let's say we had an unborn child in the womb who has a disease or a disorder and they're dying. Instead of killing that child, what would be appropriate would be to give birth and to care for that child through something called perinatal hospice, and just to gradually, that they've been given to us for a very short amount of time, and then to naturally let them pass on rather than directly ending their life. So just as we would not directly end the life of a dying born person, we shouldn't directly end the life of a dying unborn person. It's a very difficult situation to be in, but the most compassionate thing is not to directly end life, but to ease suffering as people naturally pass away. So that's how the church would approach an issue like that. Is that a helpful explanation?
I'm sorry, what?
Is that a helpful explanation?
That is a helpful explanation, but you're not taking into account the emotional, down, depressive moment that you're in. But we went on to have a healthy child 3 years later, and she's 19 years old.
Hey, Will.
Well, I'm glad to hear you were blessed with that child. But I will say that I've taken into account that it is difficult. I do not believe that justifies abortion, because when you're in a situation, because if you think about this, when you have a diagnosis of a fetal anomaly, your child is sick, this is a couple who is joyously awaiting the birth of their child, would have, in many cases, would never have considered abortion. The fact of the matter is, they are going to go through an emotional gut punch. They're going to go through possibly depression, but they're going to be in for a trial no matter which option they choose. Whether it's choosing abortion or choosing to give birth, your child is dying. One option is to grieve the natural death of your child. The other is to grieve the death of the child that you caused. And so, and I think for many people, that having participated in it can cause more grief. So I firmly agree that when a child passes on, and when you are dealing with that, with the suffering of a child, tremendous grief. The weight of the world on your shoulders, that's where we need grace in order to bear it and not resort to things that we think will help us get around that grief but might actually compound it. So that's how I would approach that issue. And for our listeners who might know someone in a situation like this, look up perinatal hospice. It's hospice. Normally we think of hospice for older people at the end of their life, senior citizens or the disabled. But there are hospice that are available for newborns who have a congenital abnormality.
Lewis, thank you very, very much for that call. We have lots and lots of calls on the line, and we'll try to get to them. It is the case, Trent, that God's mercy is endless, that we don't always, when we're in a stressful situation, make the right decision, but the mercy is available to us at all times.
Yeah, so if we ever, for those who listen who have chosen abortion, I know I've spoken very strongly against this, and I believe in speaking strongly against abortion. I want them to know that God wants to rescue them from any of the despair that comes with sin, any sin, especially abortion. So to turn to God and say, I want the weight from this past decision, whether it was a week, 2 weeks, 20 years, 50 years, turn to God, go to the sacrament of confession to ask for to be released from the weight of this sin.
888-318-7884, the number. We're asking, why are you pro-choice today? And we're very grateful for the people who have taken the time to call and share that with us. Tracy in Toronto, Canada, I'm going to let you tell us why you are pro-choice, but we're very short on time, so we may have to allow you to have a conversation with Trent on the other side. Tracy, why are you pro-choice?
That's okay. I'm a very fast talker, so that'll work out fine.
Me too.
Sure.
I just wanted to say, I was listening to the program earlier, and you mentioned that, of course, that people were using the term parasite, and I'm very pro-choice, but definitely don't believe that there should be called parasites. That is a very insensitive language, I believe. But
sure.
Also, especially, I wanted to say to Trent that I'm very sorry. I think it was Trent who said it, but who had a loss of a child, so I'm very sorry to hear about that.
Thank you.
Now, to my actual point, I think my biggest thing is mostly that I used to work in a women's shelter for abused women, and many of them came to me about abortions they'd had because, not because of circumstances they wanted to be in, but, you know, fate had been so kind to them. And in a lot of cases, one particular sticks out my mind where a woman was sexually assaulted, and the man she was with, who would have been the perceived father, I suppose, very loose definition of father in that case, but, and she figured she was going to be opening him to a life of physical abuse and things like that.
Tracy, so, we see where we're going with this, but we have to take that break. You do talk fast. You got more to say, though, so hang on. We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Did the Catholic Church add books to the Bible, or did Protestants remove seven books from the Old Testament? The very makeup of God's holy word hangs in the balance. Do you know the answer? In the newly revised version of his book, Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger, author Gary Machuda takes you on a fact-filled tour through the history of the Bible, revealing the whole story behind the lost books of the Protestant Old Testament. With updated information, expanded discourse on crucial issues, and a new topical index, Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger is a book that belongs in the library of every serious student of Scripture. Order your copy of Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Why does God sometimes reveal himself privately? How does the Church discern reports of supernatural miracles and apparitions? What are some of the most famous Marian apparitions in history? And what do they teach us? In 20 Answers, Apparitions and Revelations, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more. Explaining the scriptural and theological basis for private revelation, unpacking the Church's approach to evaluating and promoting miraculous phenomena, and sharing inspiring accounts of approved apparitions and revelations from the distant past to the present age. 20 Answers Apparitions and Revelations is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Barbara McGuigan.
However difficult the emotional and physical strain may be to remain faithful, I mean, I totally get that, we can never go wrong trusting in the voice of God. Know that I will pray that God, seeing your sincerity to do his perfect will, which is a beautiful thing to see, I pray he will bless you mightily with fertility.
Open Line with Barbara McGuigan, Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest, 888-318-7884, our number. We're asking you to call us and share with us why you are pro-choice, and a good many of you have, so we'll try to move through these with alacrity. When we went to the break, Tracy in Toronto was telling us about working. You said working in a shelter with women, Tracy, is that right?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me back and not running away. I volunteered for a women's shelter in Montreal, and like I was explaining an example of particularly a specific woman who had been sexually assaulted by her live-in partner, and so her choice to have an abortion was not, of course, her first primary choice.
Right.
But it's she knew that the child was going to be born into a life where they would be abused, where they would be in harm's way, certainly. And she was not in a financial situation where she could arrange any sort of other life for that child. So for me, things like that, I think it becomes it's very important, obviously, for us to not be insensitive to the idea of, you know, the rights of the fetus and or child, I'm sorry, but it's very important for us to consider those. But at what time, for me, it becomes a problem is when it starts to infringe also on the rights of the woman, because as insensitive as it is to say, like, they are the ones who are living there in this life. They know what this child is coming into, and I think it's important for women to have that right to make that decision for their child and for themselves as well. So I think that's mostly my tangent, I suppose.
Tracy, Trent?
Yeah, Tracy, here's how I might break this down, and this jumps off a little bit from a theme from some of the previous callers about what about the rights of the mother or the woman, mother, that's the mother, the rights of the baby's mother versus the rights of the child. What do we, you know, how do we keep people's rights from being infringed upon? How do we allow them to make these decisions? I think that first we have to understand that whenever someone becomes a parent, their rights always end up getting infringed in some way. For our fans who are watching on Facebook or watching this video, they may notice me yawning every now and then when I do these shows because I have a very, you know, small newborn toddler at home. My right to sleep is infringed upon a lot. Nowhere near as much as my wife, by the way. She is the real hero and saint when it comes to that regard. But all parents, you know, we get infringed upon by our children. We can't do everything we want to do because for our children's interests, some of the things we want to do get cut off or infringed upon. But also, as a parent, we have to make those decisions that are in the best interest of our child. And normally, we trust parents to do that. If they want to homeschool versus, you know, public school, as long as they're meeting minimum state standards, yeah, they're doing what they think is in their child's best interest. But, you know, if you have a parent who thinks it's in their child's best interest to marry their 12-year-old daughter off to some rich, creepy, like oil tycoon or something, I don't know, we would say, well, hold on a minute. Those parents are definitely not acting in their child's best interest. So I'd have to say with abortion, it's never in the child's best interest because we can't condone ending that child's life. Second, I'm sympathetic to what you're saying where you were working in a women's shelter in crisis situations, people who are abused, people who are in financial straits. What do we do? And sometimes when we're in situations, we can feel trapped. We can feel like there's no way out. We can't find the light of the tunnel. There's this claustrophobic sense of not knowing what to do. And I think that in some cases, and you may be familiar with this. If not, you've certainly been trained on it. People in these situations might even contemplate suicide. They feel like there's no way out of their abusive relationship, their poverty. They just can't handle it. And what we would say in those situations is, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. It's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. If you're struggling with an abusive partner, you have financial problems, you feel trapped, don't allow the stress of your situation to cloud your thinking and to do something rash. So we'd say for the man or woman, or let's say a woman in that situation, don't take your own life for these temporary problems that can be resolved. We can work through these. I would just say we should take that same attitude we take towards suicide to abortion and say, look, you're in a stressful situation, but abortion is a permanent solution for the life of your child to these temporary problems, problems that can be worked through. So that's how I might approach it. What do you think of that?
My one question there would definitely be your comment about, the infraction of the parents. You know, obviously, of course, every person who becomes a parent knows I'm not going to be able to go out and party, or I'm not going to be going to my friend's house all the time, or even sleeping, as you so said. But to me, yeah. I think my question is, okay, but we're not looking at a situation in this particular case where this woman willingly became a parent. She was,
sure.
This child was the result
it's,
of
assault.
A sexual assault. Exactly.
Right. And so, but what I would say there is, what I'd say there, Tracy, is this. Because we have a lot of other callers. Even in these cases, that when we become parents, our obligations to our children do not arise primarily from our decision to become a parent. Because, for example, many people have sex and they use contraception and they are not planning to become a parent. And then, you know, lo and behold, contraception is not perfect. It's used improperly. They may become a parent. They still have obligations to that child. Someone who's a victim of rape, a horrible, unjust situation, terrible. But what happens is the obligations as parents that we have to children arises because of our relationship to these children. So whether it's because of lack of birth control or in a terrible situation like rape, in any situation you have a child, the child comes into existence, and we ask, who's going to take care of this child? This child will die if someone does not take care of them. And naturally we would say the mother and father would do that, unless the mother or father were unfit. And so what I would say in the case of rape is that the father has made himself unfit by violating the child's mother in this way, and the child should be protected from the father, especially if he has this kind of criminal record and, you know, violent disposition and things like that. But the father should still financially support the child, even if he's not the legal guardian. But I would still say there that even in cases where we don't plan on becoming a parent, or it's foisted upon us through violence, what remains is there is a child who needs parents, needs a mother and father to care for them. We should look to those individuals first. And if they are fit, if they are physically and psychologically capable, of course it's stressful, but if they are able to, they should care for that child, because that child is better off if they can be placed in a manageable, low-stress situation with their biological parent. So that's how I would look at that situation, and I'm very grateful for your perspective, and thanks so much for calling.
Thanks, Tracy. We do have to move because we have so many calls and so little time. We go now to Danielle in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on 102.7 FM. Danielle, why are you pro-choice?
I guess you can say I'm pro-choice, but I'd rather say that pro-God. To me, I think it should be left up to the mothers or the women who are pregnant. I just think everyone should let them make their own decision, because in the end, it's up to God who they're going to have to answer to about the decision that they made to abort their child or not. And I wanted to bring up another caller had mentioned the death penalty. And to me, the death penalty is no different, and I'm confused on why they allow the death penalty, but it's weird because they allow the death penalty, and right, as I'm understanding, abortion is allowed right now, correct?
Yes.
The death penalty in certain states, the death penalty is legal.
Oh, right. So certain states control it, yes. So to me, I would also, so I probably would be against the death penalty. To me, it all should be left up to God in the end. I know there are people who are really passionate about, you know, abortions and, you know, the fact that they are killing the fetus in the womb, but it's like an issue that is, to me, it really can't be controlled, because
Danielle, what do you think if we leave the issue up to God, what do you think he will do?
Well, we know that God said that thou shalt not kill, so I guess it would be if that person asks for forgiveness or not, or I would hope, you know, that, I would hope God will forgive them, so...
Yeah, well, God forgives any sin. God will forgive any sin if a person approaches him with a contrite heart who's repenting of sin. But it's interesting, it seems you agree abortion is wrong, and that God thinks abortion is wrong too, and would punish someone for doing this unless they repent or unless they ask for forgiveness. But do you think God wants us to do something about abortion? For example, in Proverbs 24:11 in Scripture, in Proverbs 24:11, God's word says, rescue those who are being dragged away to death. Hold back those who are stumbling into this pit. You know, rescue those who are being dragged away to death. Proverbs 24:11. Do you think God wants us to take care of the unborn, to take care of children and women, to do something to stop children from being killed through abortion?
Well, I do know that God gave man free will to do pretty much to make your own decisions. So
Daniel, before we have to go to break quickly, I don't mean to interrupt. You're right, we have free will. But would you agree that when people use their free will to hurt others, God allows us to give them consequences? Like if someone uses their free will to rob a bank, we don't say, well, I'm just going to leave it up to God. We hold them accountable, right?
We do.
Okay, so then shouldn't we hold people accountable if they end the life of their child?
Yes, but this is, you know, that's different from, you know, this is life or death we're talking about. But I just feel like it has to, if abortion is needed to be controlled, it would have to start way before abortion. It would have to start at, you know, you would have to try to control young girls having sex and young, you know, teenagers having sex, and you would have to control birth control. And it's because, you know, I'm pretty sure there's...
Danielle, if I may just interrupt. So your point is that practically you don't think we can do away with abortion, that there's no practical way to do that. Is that it?
No, because I feel like, and, you know, there's many different situations, yes, where... someone could say aborting the baby would be appropriate, you know, rape or if something was wrong with the child. But if you're going to allow one abortion, then you have to allow them all.
All right. We have to take a quick break, Danielle. I'm sorry to cut you off right there. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll allow Trent to respond to that. We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Are you coming to the Catholic Answers Conference this September?
You guys put on a great show, so it's well worth coming.
Very powerful, very motivational and moving.
I think it's awesome. It's been really amazing to get to know people from all across the country.
Every time somebody's speaker finishes, I feel like I want to cry just because of how happy I am.
It's been pretty phenomenal. Very educational, enlightening.
This year's conference is September 28th through the 30th here in beautiful San Diego, and we want to see you there. Seats are still available, but act now because they are going fast. Call us today at 1-888-291-8000 or visit CatholicAnswersConference.com now and reserve your spot.
This is where it starts, and it definitely has started for me.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 6:6, when confronted with a man's withered hand on the Sabbath, Jesus asked the scribes and Pharisees, "Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath or evil? To preserve life or to destroy it?" He looked at them and then told the man to stretch out his hand, which he healed on the spot. The scribes and Pharisees were aghast. Fully aware that Sabbath observance was never meant to come before charity, Jesus cut through their petty concerns by simply putting first things first. It was his familiarity with the will of the author that caused so many people to praise him for speaking with authority. Through his church, he speaks today with the same authority, giving priority of life over personal choice, marriage until death over divorce, sexual purity over lust and sexual aberrations. First things first simply means the truth. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Final segment, lots of calls, so we'll try to go relatively quickly. What I was trying to get at with Danielle before the break was it seemed like she had a practical objection. That is to say, well, if you say abortion should be illegal, but you can never get people to fully stop. Like, you'd have to control everything in the society to put an end to abortion. Have you heard that argument before?
Yeah, I have. People make that argument a lot when they'll say that they'll make the back alley abortion objection, as it's called. They'll say, well, we can't make abortion illegal because if it's illegal, people will choose other dangerous methods, more unsafe methods. But for me, abortion is always unsafe because half the people involved always end up dying, you know, the unborn. So that will come up. Or people will say, well, it's just futile. People are going to break the law anyways. But this argument doesn't work because that's true for any law. Can you name like any law that people pass that nobody ever breaks? We have
gravity.
Laws because – well, sorry. Tell those
nobody
SpaceX people different.
Yeah. Right.
Right. A legal moral law.
Right.
Because, of course, the laws of nature you cannot break. They're descriptive, not prescriptive. That's like saying, well, we can't outlaw abortion because people are going to still have abortions.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, well, then we can't outlaw armed robbery, rape, arson, burglary.
What's the point? People are still going to do these things.
People, right. But obviously, when you outlaw them, people do them less. It seriously reduces it. So there's a strange dissonance on the one hand when people say, well, don't make abortion illegal because, you know, you're not going to be able to stop people. You're not going to be able to do anything. Then I would say, well, why not just make it illegal so pro-lifers shut up already? If it's not going to change anything and it's illegal, then we're out of options.
I never thought of that argument. Yeah. Right.
And what they'll say is, well, no, because if you make it illegal, then essentially many people will not be able to get abortions. Well, but that's the point.
Yeah.
That's the point to do it. So, for example, I mean, this is – and I've had people try to dispute this with me on the air and – I think it's just because they don't want to accept the principle. You know, they say they want to reduce abortions. So I say, well, make it illegal. That will reduce it. No, it won't affect it. How? Imagine if you went out on the freeway, the streets today, and there were no speed limits, like the Autobahn in Germany, no speed limits. Do you think, on average, people will drive faster or more people will speed?
Yes.
I think it's just obvious. People would that if you take away, or a more dramatic example, if you made bank robbery, the law that says bank robbery is illegal, if you got rid of that, there won't be very much money in banks, will there? There won't be.
Well, mine won't be because I'm going to take it out, but I see what you're saying. Yeah, it'd be right.
Just like when people say, like the previous caller, well, you have to address all these other issues, like education, things like that. But you can't. It's not either or. Pro-lifers aren't saying just make it illegal and then do nothing. We just want to protect the unborn in law and then put forward social programs to nourish and help them and help people make responsible decisions. So it's not either or there. That's like saying, well, we can't pass those speed limits because if you want people to drive correctly, you got to get into driver's education. You got to get people when they're young and teach them how to drive properly. Yeah, you can do that, but you can also put up a sign that says not to go faster than this. They're not exclusive in that regard.
All right, let's go to Frederick in Washington, D.C., listening on the iHeartRadio app, I take it, probably to Guadalupe Radio there in Washington, D.C. Frederick, why are you pro-choice? Frederick? Oh, hang on, Frederick. Frederick, are you there? Why are you pro-choice?
Can you hear me?
I can.
All right, perfect. Hey, guys.
Hi.
I'm pro-choice mainly because I've listened to people's points from the conversations you had earlier, and I also listened to the statement you made earlier about comparing making abortions illegal to robbing a bank and that being illegal, how you can't just remove that law. The difference between assaulting somebody or robbing a bank is the fact you're impacting someone else's existing rights and civil liberties, and you're impacting an actual person who has a family, things along those lines. When it comes to the abortion situation, I believe that at that point in time, when a person is having a child or a person is pregnant, I believe that mother's decision as to how to go about with that situation. I don't think anyone should be having reckless abortions. I don't support that they're reckless abortions. But I believe there are certain circumstances and situations in which I'm understanding of a mother or parents who have decided to make that tough decision to have an abortion. I feel like a lot of people who are pro-choice, not pro-choice, who are pro-life, haven't necessarily experienced the tough situations in which they judge other people or in which they pass judgment or pass a decision for other people, saying, no, you must have this child. No, you must go through this situation. You must have this. When it comes to
Frederick, world, it's interesting. You said there are situations where people have reckless abortions. Isn't that a judgment you've passed on their situations?
But those reckless abortions are reckless abortions in the sense of if they needlessly have unprotected sex and they end up in a situation, those I feel are reckless abortions, but I don't feel like the abortion in general should be taken away from people altogether. I feel like when you're pro-life, you're saying nobody, period, should have abortions. It shouldn't be available, and I don't agree with that statement.
Do you think that people who have sex without contraception, quote-unquote, unprotected sex, engage in risky sexual behaviors, do you think they should not be allowed to have abortions?
It depends on the education. You can't just make a blanket statement like that. That's like saying, as long as you go to school and you study hard, you're guaranteed a good life. There are people who have
a system. Can you give me a situation where you'd say, okay, that abortion should be illegal?
Would I say that abortion should be illegal? I don't think
a specific situation.
I don't think abortion
okay,
should
so
be illegal.
You believe people should be able to have an abortion legally for any reason or no reason?
Yes. I believe that's okay. Their right at that point in time. That's a mother's right. I do believe there should be a cutoff. I'm not a person to say when that cutoff is, but I don't agree that abortion should be a blanket statement illegal for parents to have.
When you say a cutoff, you mean in a certain number of weeks or how old the child is?
Yes, yeah, so the developmental stage. That's a very difficult part to come across as to
okay.
When you don't develop stuff. But I still believe that a woman or a parent should be able to make that decision.
What about there are philosophers who have proposed this. What if we did the cutoff at 50 weeks, 50? Child is 50 weeks or younger. Now, I want to remind you, Frederick, that pregnancy only lasts 40 weeks. So what would I be suggesting here?
I can't make that. That's assuming the baby's been born. If the baby has not been born already, meaning
it's 3 weeks after birth. Should she be allowed to kill the child then?
What do you mean by killing the child? Do you mean by allowing it to die naturally due to birth defects, or do you mean by saying this is a perfectly healthy baby that's living and I want to terminate that child's life?
She just puts the child outside and doesn't want to be forced to have to care for it anymore.
I think that's wrong, and I think she should be arrested for that. At that
point in time, she has a baby
and allows it, because that baby's been born. That's a living baby. It's already been – it's no longer a part of your body. It's not inside of you.
Okay, well, before birth, the child can't be a literal part of the woman's body, right? Because if it's a boy – then his male genitals would literally be a part of his mom, which doesn't make sense. So you're saying, no, you can't just abandon your child after birth, but before birth, when your baby's much more dependent on you, why does the fact that the child's more helpless give the mom more of a right to end the child's life? I don't get that.
I'm not talking about the child being helpless. I'm talking about the umbilical cord and the fact that the child is still a part of that mother. In the sense of
right, but why? Who cares?
Why what? Excuse me?
So what? The child needs his mom. Shouldn't moms help their kids, no matter how needy they are?
But you can't say a statement such as "so what." That's a very ignorant statement to make as "so what."
I want a reason. Okay. Well, unfortunately, I would love to continue on with this. I just hear the so what is like when someone says, well, they're dependent, so we can abort them. That's like when someone says, well, they're black or they're a woman, so we can kill them. I would rightly and indignantly say, so what if they're black or a woman? Doesn't give you a right to mistreat that person. I'd say the same thing for the unborn as well.
Frederick, thanks very much for that call. Sorry we had to go so quickly, but we are up against the clock tomorrow. Open forum, both hours. 888-318-7884, the number. Start dialing now because lots of people do for Open Forum. Thanks, Trent.
No problem.
See you tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live.